Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a really important show because we're dealing with a lot of things in the news that I'm not sure that people can get their heads around. We are being told a lot of things during this COVID crisis. It's okay to riot. It's not okay to go to church. It's okay to basically protest, but going about your business and your daily activities is a problem. And one of our most important rights is the freedom of religion. And I don't know about my listeners out there, but I have a feeling that it's been under attack for quite a while. And the COVID situation is literally making it come to the forefront. I don't think people can ignore it anymore, because if we continue to do that, I think our rights will be taken away under the guise of medical necessity. And so today we're going to talk with Mr. Matt Sharp. He's a senior counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom. He earned his JD in 2006 from the Vanderbilt University School of Law. He's a member of the bar in Georgia and Tennessee, and he's admitted to practice in several federal courts. Some of his work has included important cases advancing religious freedom. He's won cases upholding the rights of students to form religious clubs, invite classmates to church, and even perform a religious song at a school talent show. And on behalf of 9,000 students and parents and community members, he's authored an amicus brief in Gloucester County School Board versus GG, asking the United States Supreme Court to uphold their right to privacy against government intrusion. And he's knowledgeable. He's been there. This is somebody who's on the front line. And Mr. Sharp, I want to thank you so much for joining me today, because I think our conversation is timely.
Absolutely. And thank you for having me.
No, it's a pleasure. So let's get started. What's your mission at Alliance Defending Freedom?
I like to sum up ADF's mission in just a brief sentence. Our job is to keep the doors open for the spread of the gospel. And we do that in a variety of ways. We do it by defending religious liberty and free speech. We do it by defending life and traditional values as it relates to marriage and family. And we do it both through litigation, filing lawsuits on behalf of people of faith, churches, ministries, and others that find their rights violated, and also in the legislative realm of working with legislators to pass laws that protect religious liberty, that protect free speech, and these values we hold so dear, and fighting against legislation that undermines those values. So we are out there on multiple fronts, fighting in these areas, but it all ultimately boils down to our mission of keeping the door open for the spread of the gospel.
You know, it's kind of interesting when you think about your mission statement and you think about how the Constitution is set up. It shouldn't be that you need to do this. You know, I mean, is this shocking to you that you have to work to this degree, to this level, just to preserve rights that we have?
Yeah,
quite frankly, they're God given, tell you the truth.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. That's how our founding fathers described them, as inalienable rights endowed upon us by our Creator. And we often tell people that the Constitution is the only permission slip we need to engage in the free exercise of religion or free speech or these other things that we're fighting for. But far too often, we bump up against government officials and others that put shackles on the ability of people of faith to live out their beliefs, their values, or to speak out on all of those. And the only thing that reminds me that it's not shocking is that we do live in a world that does not always share those values and see the importance that religion plays in the lives of countless Americans. And so it requires vigilance to preserve these freedoms and to make sure that the next generation not just has the rights, but understands the importance of exercising those rights.
I think you couldn't have said it any better than that. I think people get caught up with, it's another group. There's, you know, it doesn't apply to me, but quite frankly, it does. As one group goes, so does the entire country. Because if they can take away our freedom to speak and to worship and to do what God put us on this earth to do, everybody's at risk.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think so often it's easy to say, well, I'm not being directly impacted by this, or I don't feel censored, but it's important to look around at who is. And a lot of times college campuses are a great example that you'll see censorship take place, and it's against a pro-life group that's wanting to put up a display of crosses showing the number of children killed in abortion each year. And they find themselves being told, no, they can't do that. Or it's a kid wanting to share the gospel in a public area of campus. And we may say, well, that's the campus culture and it's not impacting us. But the students at that campus and the people there are eventually going to grow up to run business and run government. And unless we're willing to stand with free speech on, for example, the college campus, then we have to recognize that's one day is going to impact the rest of us.
I think that's absolutely correct. And, you know, from the standpoint of freedom of speech in college campuses and the government being involved, how does that work where the government is giving universities money, but they're stamping on the rights of the individual students? Is there some sort of conflict of interest in that? Or is there something that the students who are affected, can they use that as a means to get their freedom back?
Yeah, well, even more than that, I like to remind people is that every public college, every public high school and middle school and elementary school are subject to the First Amendment. When it talks about that the government can't infringe our right to free speech or free exercise of religion, that applies to every government institution. And so the free speech rights we have at the public park or out on the public street are just as strong when a kid heads off to college or to their K through 12 high school. And so we tell students, you do not give up your rights just because you walk on a college campus. And that's enabled us to get hundreds of victories for students wanting to share their faith or to speak out on issues about life or marriage or other things like that. And it's all because the First Amendment applies all across the board to all of those public government-run institutions.
How do you know, it sounds, and it thank God you exist, because students who've used your services have gotten their rights back. But, you know, I didn't know before we did our research that you existed. How do you get the word out so that other, like everybody across the country, if they have a fight, that they can call on you?
Well, a few ways. Some of them primarily is through recordings and discussions like this, where we're able to let people know about the work ADF is doing and the cases we take. But we also do a lot of outreach. We do outreach to college campuses and to student groups that meet there. We'll go and attend their national conferences and educate them on their college campus rights, of what they're allowed to do and things that the government and public school officials cannot do to restrict their free speech rights. We also work a lot with pastor and church networks. And so we've got thousands of churches that we provide resources to and educate on their rights and embolden pastors to go out and inform their congregations. And then a lot of it is just through word of mouth, through people hearing about our cases, seeing a news report about, for example, Jack Phillips, the Colorado baker that we were able to represent at the U.S. Supreme Court, and to then reach out to us when they experience a similar type of discrimination against their speech or their religion. So it's lots of ways that ADF tries to get the message out about the work we're doing and to educate people about their rights to engage in free speech, to exercise their religion, and their ability to take action if those rights are being violated.
Well, let's take our first break so that people can digest that, because it's nice to know that we are empowered. We don't have to take anything and just hope for the best or expect the government to help us, because we have our rights. So we just have to take our power back. On that note, let's take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Matt Sharp, Senior Counsel with the Alliance Defending Freedom. And before the break, you did a really great job of giving us a synopsis of the big picture of the fact that every human being has power, and we're blessed to live in the United States where this is written in a constitution that we have the right to practice our religion and to be free to speak our mind. This is an interesting question, which I'm personally interested in knowing. You may not be able to answer it, but it always seems to be open season on Christian students. Are other faiths having this problem?
Well, I do think that other faiths experience this. We at ADF have actually had the opportunity to work with students of a variety of faiths, and even students that really have no faith, that just have found themselves censored because of their political views or other views that the university doesn't like. So I do think this is something that impacts people from a variety of walks of life. But that being said, we do seem to see more and more efforts to go after Christian views and Christian beliefs, that they seem to often be the target of restrictions that others don't often experience. But this just goes to show you, like we were talking about earlier, is that even if someone looks at this and says, well, you know, I'm not a Christian or I don't share those views, whatever, we have seen it all too often that the government comes down against a variety of people. And what ought to concern us is that if anyone's rights are being violated, that means the government could one day come after your rights and your speech and your views if the government doesn't like them. And that's why we have to be united in standing for these fundamental values of free exercise of religion and free speech, because they matter to all of us, even if it's another group that's experiencing the discrimination by the government for living out those views and those beliefs.
And you're saying something extremely important, because when you listen to the mainstream media, you would think that it's solely affecting Christian Americans and that it doesn't affect any other group. But I feel like it's a strategy to divide and conquer. And that's what they exactly don't want, is for us to figure out that we all have to hang together in order to make sure we have our freedoms. And to pick off and divide us is not helping us win the situation at all.
Yeah, it is very important for us to, people of faith, wherever they come from, whatever background, to speak together in one voice in all of this. And it has been one thing we've been very encouraged about in some of these battles of dealing with churches and houses of worship being, for example, shut down during COVID-19, mm-hmm. That there's been support from a variety of faiths, because all of us are united in our desire, our calling to exercise our religion and to be able to meet together to do so. And so they recognize that a loss for one particular church in, you know, California or Nevada or wherever it may be, impacts all faiths and all houses of worship across the country.
Absolutely true. And I'm just curious, could you talk a little bit, do you have any cases that stick out to you about religious freedom that are instructive for the listeners?
Yeah, quite a few. One I always like to go back to is a case we did a few years ago called Trinity Lutheran. And the facts are kind of interesting, is that it was a daycare operated by a church. And there was a state program in Missouri where you could get money for shredded up tires to use as playground resurfacing. So this provides a nice soft surface. So when a kid falls off a swing, they don't scrape their knee because they've got this nice soft rubber tire surface to land on. Well, this church operated daycare applied to get that grant, and it met all of the qualifications of how it was going to be used and the type of facility it was doing. And at the very end, the state looked at him and said, sorry, you can't get this grant. You can't get the shredded tires because you're affiliated with a church. And so they were being targeted specifically because of their religious identity. Well, this case went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and there the court gave a very resounding ruling for this program and for the principle that the government cannot discriminate against a religious entity or organization or purpose simply because of their religious identity. And that even includes in government programs, because a lot of people were saying, well, you can't require the government to give money to this church-owned daycare center. And the response was, well, if they qualify for it, you've got to treat religious organizations the same as their secular counterparts. You can't target people of faith for discrimination because of what they believe. And so this was a fantastic ruling that in the few years since that came down, we've seen applied in lots of areas, in school choice recently in Montana and in other places where people of faith are simply asking to be treated the same as everyone else. And this was an important victory for that very simple, straightforward principle that the government should never single out religious organizations or people of faith for discrimination.
That's a great case. You know, it actually reminds me of another one that's the reverse, with the Little Sisters of the Poor, where their faith did not allow them to provide contraception or after post-birth and all that other stuff, abortion. And they were really held to a different standard. So I guess it works in reverse, too, because of religious conscience. You're not going to be made to do something against your religious beliefs. Is that a good way to see it?
Yeah, it really is free exercise goes both ways. Sometimes it is the freedom to be treated the same as others, and sometimes it is the freedom to not be forced to do something that others may be wanting to do. That idea of conscience is really at the core of a lot of what we're talking about. Free speech is the ability to express vocally or in writing what my conscience is telling me. Free exercise is the ability to live that out, not only in how I worship in church, but how I operate my business, or in the case of the Little Sisters, what their insurance plan pays for. All of that ultimately boils down to that freedom of conscience, that there is a sphere within all of us that the government can never touch, that it can never force us to violate. And those freedoms of speech and of religion and these others flow out of that to make sure that we can speak about them, live about what our conscience tells us to do. And I think that's the unifying theme and so much of what we talk about when we talk about First Amendment rights and speech and free exercise of religion.
I absolutely agree. And the thing that strikes me too, just listening to what you're saying, freedom of speech and freedom to be who you are doesn't mean you're taking away something from somebody else. I think that's been conflated during this whole crisis of, I don't know, it's like a difference in what moving the ball from what morality and ethics and all those things are. I think the argument has been used to shut people up, quite frankly, because most people are, they don't want to step on anybody's toes. They just want to live their life and not encroach in anybody else's existence. But that's not how this is playing out. It's being said, because you have this, you somehow took away someone else's whatever. And of course, that makes everybody think of you as the bad person. How can we really shine the light? What you just said in the last 10 minutes, 15 minutes, really shine the light on the positive side of this, because the media doesn't do that at all. They try to demonize everything. But is there something that if you live with conscience, you know, you have a life where your conscience and your ethics, and your morals drive you. What's the best way? I know, it's a kind of an esoteric question, but how do you stand up for yourself? How do you take your power that is inherent that you have back? I think people back down way too much, and it gives people who are trying to exert their own force a lot more power than they actually have.
Yeah, this is an area where courage is more important than ever. I mentioned earlier Jack Phillips, the Colorado cake artist that we were able to represent. It cost Jack a lot to take a stand when he said, "I am glad to serve everyone that walks into my shop, but there are certain cakes, certain things that I'm unwilling and unable to use my creative talent to assist with." So that included things like cakes celebrating Halloween. He didn't like all of the imagery and, you know, vampires and witches and all of that stuff. It led him to not create cakes with alcohol in them because he didn't want to call someone that maybe was a recovering alcoholic to stumble. And it also led him to say, "I can't create a wedding cake celebrating a union that violates my convictions." And so Jack took a stand, but it came at a cost. It cost him, you know, his business, it cost him customers and other things, but he knew at the end of the day that this was a freedom worth fighting for, even at his own personal expense. And because of his fight, he got a victory at the U.S. Supreme Court that has helped countless Americans. And so I think ultimately it comes down to reminding people that the conviction to stand, maybe that's what they're called to. Maybe that's the battle that they are uniquely placed to stand up for and to fight for rights that are going to benefit countless Americans when just one individual will stand up and have the courage to say, "Look, I'm just asking for the freedom to live out my conscience and to live out my faith, the same freedom that I want for every other American."
I don't think it's a lot to ask. And it's, we're in an existential crisis almost in our country, where if your ability to speak up for yourself and to explain, you don't even get a chance at this point, I don't think, to really explain what you're trying to say. They're just jumped on. So I think you're right. It does take conscience. It takes courage. It takes a feeling, a sense of self. You really have to have a relationship, quite frankly, with God in order to know that, and it sounds a little bit out there, but you're not of this world, right? You're part of a bigger whole. And if this is something that's going to make you run against your own, you know, what makes you who you are, then you really shouldn't do it. But the government is now, has there been a change in how the government is operating? Are they being more friendly to the argument for religious freedom than in the past?
I think so. I think a lot of these victories we've seen, ones like Jack Phillips, one like Little Sisters of the Poor and Trinity Lutheran and others have put government officials on notice that they are going to be held accountable when they trample our constitutional freedoms, that no longer are people going to sit by passively and say, well, it is what it is, but rather they're standing up. And I do think we've seen incredible instances where government officials have voluntarily changed policies or walked back something that they'd said or done mm-hmm. once they became aware that there is accountability when they try and violate people's constitutional rights. And so we've really seen in the past few years, several victories at the U.S. Supreme Court and appellate courts across the country. We just had one within the past week of a photographer in Kentucky that was concerned whether she was going to be forced to do photography for same-sex weddings. And she got a fantastic ruling from a court there. And all of this flows out from these individuals and organizations taking a stand. And I think that really helps bring about a change in the culture of respecting religious freedom, of respecting those rights, and encouraging government officials to take these rights seriously and not do anything that undermines them.
You know, it's kind of striking that the government at any point would have ruled in ways that are counter to this inalienable right, right? I mean, how did it even get to this point, do you think, that you have to fight just to hold your ground? It should never have come to this.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of people look and see how politics and law is downstream of culture. And we've seen a very big sea change in American culture when it comes to things like the understanding of marriage or what it even means to be male and female. And that starts trickling down into the law. Same thing that we see less people engaged in church or engaged in their particular faith. And that trickles into the culture where you've got more and more government officials that haven't interacted with people of faith, that haven't ever been in a worship service. And that then leads them to give less deference and less respect for religious worship, to have less understanding of the importance it holds in people's lives. So I think a lot of this is a bigger cultural battle that's going on. ADF, part of what we try and do is through our legal victories and our advocacy, is to not just change the law, but to also start changing the culture and getting pastors and others that are in our position of influence to speak out on these values, to speak out on the importance of religion in the life of people, so that we see less of these attacks on people of faith and see less efforts to restrict our freedoms of speech.
Well, on that note, let's take our second break. I mean, what you're saying is something that everybody should take to heart and start practicing. On that note, let's take our second break. You're living in the solution.
If you missed the show, you can listen to it on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and a host of other multimedia platforms. Subscribe and share it with your friends. You're listening to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George, healthcare consumer advocate.
Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Matt Sharp, senior counsel with the Alliance Defending Freedom. And, you know, before the break, Mr. Sharp, you said a lot that it's on us, isn't it? I mean, it's about personal responsibility, and it's about being able to know who you are and not let anybody back you down. So my question is a segue to that. How rampant do you think religious discrimination is now in the country?
I think it's very rampant. I think the COVID-19 crisis has been an example to shine light just on how rampant it is. When this hit, obviously there was a lot of trying to figure out what's going on, but it was troubling to see how quickly a lot of that turned into targeting churches and often uniquely churches for disfavorable treatment compared to a lot of other gatherings and meeting places and things like that. We're also seeing this play out, as we discussed earlier, on college campuses. Whereas before, there used to be much greater tolerance and acceptance for a variety of views, including religious views. We're seeing less and less of that, of students being bullied and intimidated when they want to speak up in class to share a religious viewpoint on a topic being discussed, or when they want to form a religious student club. So I do think it is a growing concern that we're seeing play out, not just in, you know, churches and those, but our college campuses and so many places across the country where there's more and more effort to silence and censor people who are speaking out on their faith or other values that culture at large just doesn't like anymore.
It's important to go, obviously, to court and to get your rights. But what about the damage that's done to somebody? I mean, to have to run up against people who are literally calling into question your character, sometimes removing you from school. I mean, these are damages, not just against the First Amendment, but I'd say personal injury, you know, to a certain degree. Is that something also that is being litigated? Not just getting your rights, but making them accountable?
Absolutely. In fact, one of the things we often say is that it's hard to put a price tag on the loss of First Amendment freedoms. The being told that you can't speak, especially, you know, we could imagine there's a current debate going on some particular subject, and telling a student that they can't speak out or a pastor that they can't speak out on that issue, that opportunity is lost forever. So when we file lawsuits, we're not only asking for an injunction, a court order telling the government to stop and to allow the speech to occur, but often we're pursuing damages and attorney's fees on behalf of the clients we represent, because we do think that these First Amendment freedoms, they're valuable, they're priceless. Mm-hmm. And courts have upheld that. And they've recognized, you know, if you've got a student that spent hundreds of dollars on flyers and are then told that they can't hand them out, well, that student's been damaged very practically, just in the printing cost and other things like that. But it does show that courts are willing to hold government officials accountable and force them to pay attorney's fees and other damages when there is a violation of our First Amendment freedoms.
Well, that's good to know. And now that, again, now that we're in this COVID situation, some of these governments locally have just been, to me, unconscionable in what they've tried to pull and actually have pulled. I mean, it's okay to write, but it's not okay to go to church and all the other things that they've done. Do you think this is an overstepping of their authority to make churches close, to basically have a two-tier system of justice in this country?
Yes. While we recognize that government officials, they have the authority to protect health and safety, that's what we charge them to do, our First Amendment, including our free exercise of religion and being able to speak out, is never suspended during a time of emergency. In fact, often those freedoms are more important than ever during times of public health crisis or others, when people are needing comfort, when they're needing community to deal with all of the turmoil going on. And so while we understand that government officials are balancing a lot of competing interests, they are always subject to the First Amendment and their obligation to protect the freedom to exercise our faith, the freedom to worship, and the freedom to speak out about these issues.
Agreed. Is there anything that we, that's from a legal perspective, that they can be held to account? It's like they're doing it with impunity. I mean, stepping all over First Amendment, Second Amendment, you name it. But there's no, I don't see them. Is anybody going after them? Is anybody litigating against that behavior?
Absolutely. ADF is. In fact, we have so far had about 3,000 churches that we've advised of what their rights on. And quite often, that's all it takes. Sometimes it's just a matter of a church contacting their government official and saying, hey, you've crossed the line. You need to allow us to gather in person or to have a drive-in service. But we've had a few times where we've had to step in. So we've done everything from sending demand letters to government officials to even filing lawsuits. And during the past few months when all of this has been going on, we've had over 14 legal victories where either a demand letter or a lawsuit was able to bring about much needed relief for a church. And so this is instances where sometimes a church was wanting to do a drive-in service or have in person or other things where the church was being very reasonable. Mm-hmm. Church was acting to protect its congregation, but said, look, we feel compelled to gather together during this time and want to do so safely. And the government just wasn't allowing it. So ADF and other organizations out there are litigating on behalf of churches and securing some very important victories in this regard.
Oh, that's good to know. Honestly, again, if you ever listen to the mainstream media, you would not know this is going on. I'm just so happy that you're on the show. So you can give us the other side and the fact that this playing field is being leveled, because you really think, well, why bother? It's just so overwhelming. You just have no choice. But you're here to say that you do have a choice and you have the law on your side. So if you are anybody listening who's in a situation that they feel that their rights, religious rights, are being stamped on, trampled, then you have somebody that you're on the show right now who you should reach out to. Because I think there has to be a tipping point where people know that they lose so many of these cases, they stop doing it. Is there something that you think that there'll be a point that you won't even have to even worry about this because precedent and the number of cases you've won make the people have a second thought about spending money against you?
Yeah, I hope so. I think we're still a long way from that point. But I do think the more churches stand up and we get these victories, the quicker government officials are to do the right thing. And I can give some concrete examples of within the first couple of months when we had the COVID-19 and everyone was trying to figure out, we again had dozens and dozens and dozens of situations where churches were being singled out oftentimes or subject to restrictions that were not being placed on other similar types of gatherings. Instances where restaurants can have drive-in services. You can go to a restaurant, sit in the parking lot and eat your meal. But churches were being told you can't have a drive-in worship service, even if you keep your windows closed, even if everyone stays in their car. And I look at that and say, that's ridiculous. The protections that are happening at the restaurant are no different than the ones that are happening in the church. And the risk is the same. You can't single out churches for discriminatory treatment in that situation. Well, as I said, we sent demand letters and we filed lawsuits. And what we found is that since then, more and more government officials know the limits on what they're allowed to do. And they know that when they are taking steps to protect public health, and we know they're balancing a lot of interest, that they can't single out churches and religious gatherings. They can't start with an assumption that church gatherings are somehow more dangerous or more likely to spread it, but rather have to acknowledge, no, the risk at church or the risk at same at a restaurant or at a office park or at a casino, and you've got to treat them all the same. So we have seen how just a handful of churches taking a stand and fighting on this has brought about change across the country. But at the same time, we still have some places in some states that are continuing to dig in their heels in their fight, which is why we always tell people we can never give up. We can never just sit back and think that the battle is over. There will always be instances where we have to take a stand for religious freedom and free speech.
Absolutely right. I think I know those states that are digging in their heels. But do you have a plan to try to push them, nudge them in the right direction? Or are we just depending on their conscience? It seems like they don't have one to me. It's lying and you name it, just in your face with not a crack of a smile, no conscience. This is a very hard people to deal with when they're wrong. It's by like a de jure and de facto, and they don't even care. How do you deal with that?
I think we use the legal system to hold them accountable. This is where if we see that a city or state is unwilling to do the right thing and is unwilling to let churches gather on the same terms as other similar meeting places, we're going to take them to court and we're going to hold them accountable. And we're not going to give up until we have exhausted all opportunities available. And so sometimes people will say, well, you lost at the lower court. Why not just give up there and accept it? Well, because we're going to appeal. We're going to take the case all the way to the Supreme Court if necessary, because these rights are valuable. They're priceless, really. And we're never going to let one bad precedent stand and let that be the end all be all of what our rights are. So often we can look back in history and there's been one bad court decision that because people continue to fight and say, no, we're not going to let that bad court decision stand, we eventually see it overturned and freedom allowed to flourish. And that's how ADF views these. And so even when we take a case and there may be a setback like we have seen in a couple of cases, we're going to continue to fight. We're going to continue to advocate and bring these cases because we know ultimately, by the grace of God, He can intervene and help protect our freedom of religion and the ability of churches and others together in worship.
Oh, that's beautifully said. On that note, let's take our last break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Matt Sharp. He's authored federal and state legislation, regularly provides legal analysis on how proposed legislation will impact constitutional freedoms, and advises governors, legislators, and state and national policy organizations on the importance of laws and policies that protect First Amendment rights. He's also testified before state legislatures, on free speech and religious liberty issues. And it's just, once again, I just have to thank you for coming on, because you give me so much hope that it's, you know, as individuals, we feel like we're alone a lot of the time and nobody really gets it, but you do. And that you are, your organization is a means to right the ship and to bring back balance, which is really very impressive. So my next segue to questions is, what about the pastors and congregations that you're dealing with, ones that have taken the ball, run with it, and taken their freedom? How do you reach out to congregations across the country? Because it has to be a group effort, right?
Yeah, it really is. And one of the recent things ADF started was a program we call the Church Alliance. And the idea is very simple, is it's a program where churches can sign up and have constant access to an ADF attorney to help with a variety of needs. Some of this could be looking at a church bylaw or a membership policy. It could be asking questions about how they can get involved in the local political scene, how they're allowed to engage on a piece of legislation. But then it really came into effect when the coronavirus pandemic hit, and a lot of churches asking, what are our rights? What can we do to both protect our congregation, but not give up our constitutional rights? And so through that Church Alliance, we built a network of thousands of churches that were able to equip and inform on what their rights are, to empower them to go into their communities and speak out, and even speak out at the legislative level to bring their religious perspective to these debates about legislation. But most importantly, when situations like this occur and we need churches willing to stand up and say, no, that law is unconstitutional or it's violating our right to exercise our religion, we have churches that are now able to file that lawsuit, to be the plaintiff and to defend rights on behalf of other churches that are facing similar restrictions. And so there's a sense of camaraderie of knowing that a church that's a part of the Church Alliance is not standing alone, but is supported by hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of other churches that stand with them, that are supporting for them, praying for them, and encouraging them, as that church is the tip of the spear in standing to defend our constitutional rights.
Well, that means a lot. You know, this is the neighborhood church you're talking about, not just the mega church. And that means everybody's in power, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And in fact, a lot of the cases are brought by very small churches. So for example, our case in Nevada was not a large mega church, but it was a church in sort of rural areas of the state where there had been virtually only a handful of coronavirus cases, and was saying, why are we limited to only, you know, a handful of people able to gather together, but the massive casino in downtown Vegas can have thousands of people showing up. And it was that little church that was taking the stand because it was particularly impacted by it, even though it was providing a safe environment and taking good precautions. Here it was being treated worse than the mega casinos in Vegas. And so we do see that a lot of times it is the little churches that are uniquely equipped to take a stand on this. It's kind of the David and Goliath principle, right? Sometimes it's the littlest guy with only 5 stones in his sling that are best equipped to take on the Goliath of government restrictions that many churches are experiencing.
Agreed. And so let's say on the flip side, you don't have a church, you're an individual. Is that another entity, another person that can join or ask you to help them?
Yes. In fact, a lot of our cases are brought on behalf of individuals. This can be specifically in the school context, where we often represent a single student that's taking a stand against a bad policy. We've also done it in other contexts. For example, we have cases going on in Connecticut on behalf of a couple of brave high school girls that object to a biological male being allowed to take away championships and other accolades in track and field, of men being allowed to take a spot on a woman's team. And so sometimes it is individuals taking a stand, and ADF is always honored to stand with any individual that can stand up for their rights and that wants to fight for our freedoms. And we encourage them to call us, to reach out to us, and we're able to take their cases free of charge, whether it's a simple letter to resolve it or whether it's a case that goes all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Oh, that's really awesome. I mean, I'm thinking about this because I played sports in college, and Title IX was kind of a to help women's sports. And I could see how this would go. I'm a biology major, so I don't believe in, you know, you're biologically male or female. You don't change that sort of thing. But ultimately speaking, potentially, there would be no more women getting scholarships technically if this went along the natural path that it's going to take. Yeah. And go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that's absolutely right. In fact, in the Connecticut case, just within a couple of years of these two biological males starting to compete, dozens of existing longstanding women's records were crushed time and time again. I think in over 80 instances that a girl either lost a spot on the podium or lost a chance to advance to the next round of competition because these guys were allowed to compete. And so we saw firsthand how just a couple of guys in a single state can ultimately come to dominate and completely overturn the existing fairness in sports for women athletes.
Wow, that's tragic. And, you know, again, it's this chorus. And I don't think this is a majority of people. I just think they have a megaphone and they're really loud and they have the media on their side. But they're able to push the cultural norms, or at least on the surface, because I don't think people have changed underneath. They're just afraid to speak up most of the time. But it has to be, you have to have some sort of barrier to that movement. Because it's come a long way in, what, 15 years, less than that, that we're having these conversations that I don't think we would have had back in 1986, 1990. So it's moving pretty quickly, isn't it?
Yes, it really is. And in fact, we've seen just within the past 5 years, really since the same-sex marriage decision, Obergefell, that we've seen this sweeping move to now shift everything to pushing gender identity and to undermining fairness for women and undermining privacy and safety and locker rooms and showers and restrooms and things like that. Of even pushing to require a women's shelter, a place where women that maybe are fleeing from abuse or sex trafficking, now they're being told you have to share sleeping quarters with a biological male. And all of this has happened so incredibly quickly. But to your point, we've seen some polling results that when you really ask Americans about this, a strong majority don't agree with this, that don't like guys being able to take away spots on women's teams or compromise privacy and safety in these facilities. And we just need more and more of those individuals to speak up and let their voices be heard.
I agree. And not be demonized. This is not you're against something. You're protecting somebody's rights. If you have been a victim of an attack and you have PTSD, is it right for someone to be in your potentially safe space? And it's, I mean, I can't imagine psychologically what that does to somebody, and you don't care, or you're taking away someone's right to have, you know, you're in a space it's a facility that's supposed to protect you, and potentially it couldn't happen, or it might not happen. That's a real problem. And is that something that you can litigate against the organization, the shelter, because you are not protecting someone's rights? You're supposed to be.
Yeah, well, fortunately, we've actually had the opportunity to represent some shelters that are standing up against that view their duty first and foremost is to provide a safe environment for the women that they serve. We had this happen in Anchorage, Alaska, and the shelter had a biological male show up wanting to get in. And the shelter acted with incredible love and compassion. And they said, look, although we can't allow you in here with the females we serve, there's another shelter in town. We'd be happy to take you into it, to get you a place to stay, and really showed love and compassion to this man that identified as a woman, while also still showing love and compassion to the women that it was serving in its shelter. And I think that's the right balance that these shelters are trying to take is, like you said, this is not to demonize or show animosity. Just the contrary, they're showing love to everyone. And that includes the women that shelter served, making sure that their physical, emotional, psychological needs are put first and foremost as they're taking care of them and offering the shelter services that they do.
I think you've really highlighted a really important thing. This is not black or white. It's not that cut and dry. It has to be looked at from all sides and each individual case. And I think that's where the people who are pushing this agenda fail. It's always a one size fits all. It's always all or none. And life is not like that. So if we can be confident in protecting our rights, I think we'll strike a balance at some point. But the pendulum cannot continue to swing this way. I think that's without a doubt. How can people reach you? What's the best way to find your services?
So they can visit our website, which is adflegal.org. That's ADF Legal, short for Alliance Defending Freedom. adflegal.org. They can learn more about our cases. We actually have a dedicated page set up for churches and others that have questions about the COVID-19 and what they can do to protect their congregation, but also stand for their rights. And there's even a button at the top where if someone needs legal help, they can give us a call. And again, free of charge, speak to one of our attorneys, get questions, get help to whatever their legal need is. If they're taking a stand to defend life or free speech or freedom to exercise religion. And that's what we exist to do. So they can visit adflegal.org.
Just so I can clarify, as long as it's a religious question, can you be non-Christian and still access your services?
Yes. In fact, as I mentioned before, we've actually had the chance to work with non-Christians and people of other faith that are taking a stand for religious liberty or that are taking a stand for free speech. So quite often we've worked with student groups at colleges and universities that are not religious, but that are taking a stand for free speech on college campus. So absolutely, we want to stand with anyone that is standing for these fundamental constitutional freedoms that we're all fighting for.
Mr. Sharp, time goes so quickly, but I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I learned a lot, and I know my listeners have as well. And thank you for all your hard work.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk Events.